Your online feature will begin in just a moment. First, a reminder that BBN is a listener-supported Christian radio and internet ministry. To support us, click donations at bbnradio.org. That's donations at bbnradio.org.
In the midst of your busy day, ladies, thanks for tuning in to Building Blocks for the Family. We're helping you build a strong family to the glory of God. Our guest today is Arlene Pelliquin. Technology has made a lot of advances in recent years, but are they good or bad? For instance, when it comes to your telephone, is technology bringing your family closer together, or is it pushing your family apart? Think about that with us today. Arlene Pelliquin and Growing Up Social.
If you're hosting any kind of kids event and you're giving something out and there's a big long line, they'll say, why didn't I get the Snickers? I wanted the green one. I wanted the blue one. She got a bigger piece than me. And there'll be one child who will say, thank you. And you'll say, who are you? And what God has raised you? You know, you'll be so amazed that this kid actually said thank you. And if you can raise a child who is grateful, you are head and shoulders above the rest of society. Because what technology teaches is whatever I want is instant. Have you noticed that your children get antsy? It's like, oh, mom, what's happening? Like, it's waiting. Mom, there's no Wi-Fi. Mom, I can't get on. I can't get it. You know, they freak out because they're used to what everything being instant. And when they're used to everything being instant, when things don't go that way, because life is not like that, they become very entitled and like, I need it now. Think of the choices. If they don't like the program they're watching, there are 700 others. If they don't like the commercials, don't worry, we have the DVR. If you don't like us, you know, it used to be we have to buy a whole album, you know, of something. You know, those of you who remember that, now they can just pick the song. So they're very used to getting exactly what they want when they want it because of technology. And because of the choice and because of the ease, it makes them very entitled and very ungrateful when things do not go their way. So really, for you to think, ooh, if I see this in my child, I need to limit how convenient his or her life is. So it's okay for your child to be bored. It's actually good for them. It is okay for your child not to get the latest and the greatest right when it comes out, not to be like everyone else, the third grader in school that has the iPhone. I didn't get my phone until I was in my 40s, and I see this like third grader with a phone exactly like mine. And so it's okay for you to make your child wait for electronics, earn their electronics so that they can be grateful. You know, you know stories like this. One family, one child earned a laptop. The other child was given a laptop. And you know which high schooler took better care of their laptop, the one that had to earn it for themselves. And so if you have your children earn things, wait for things, not get them right away, that's good. Sometimes you feel like, I'm a bad parent. I didn't give it like the other people did. No, you are a good parent. Carry on, because you're helping them to be grateful. So appreciation. The next one is anger management. And this needs no explanation. You've seen your child's anger. You've seen your own anger. One of the differences that is interesting, I was speaking to this gentleman who owns a restaurant, and he's owned it for decades, but he said what's different, of course, is that everyone's around screens, you all know this, but he said what's really strange is the brothers and sisters fight around the table, and brothers and sisters through the ages have always fought around the table, but now when they fight, the parents just whip out their games and their screens, and the kids immediately stop fighting, and then they just start playing. So, and the parents are like, yeah, you know. And so what has happened? Yes, you've got a temporary win there. You can eat in peace, and I'm sure the people next to you are happy. But what have your kids learned about anger? Not very much. They have learned that, okay, I was really mad, but this seems more fun, and I guess I'm not mad anymore. And they're going to grow up someday, if they get married, to be the couple that has the big fight, they've got the disagreement, and the husband just like, oh, whatever. And he goes in his man cave and starts playing video games. And the woman texts and says to Brett, my husband's such a jerk, hashtag jerk husband, you know. And they don't know how to communicate, and they don't know how to be angry with each other in a good, positive, constructive way. And I know so many times, sometimes as parents, we want to just avoid the whole anger thing, but instead to realize, wait a minute, my child has to learn. My child has to learn, what do I do? How can I tell good anger from bad anger? How can I have a behavior that is productive? Maybe it's run around the backyard 20 times and then come back and tell me what your sister did to me. Maybe it's go count to 100 and then come back and tell me what your sister did to me. But for you to teach, and many times we give in to them because we don't want to risk their anger. So when they say, can I watch one more show? Can I get the game? Can I watch this movie? Everyone else is watching the movie. That instead of saying no, because we know the anger is going to come, we say, oh, okay, because we'd rather avoid that anger. And that is not helping anyone either. So think about anger and how you can learn how to better manage it. And Dr. Chapman has an excellent book only on anger. I highly recommend it. All right, and then the next one is apology. And it's this whole idea that when your children grow up, they'll actually be able to apologize, own up for the things that they've done wrong, instead of saying, okay, I really messed that up with a friend, unfriend, and then it's like over. Or that they just text, sorry, when it was really like a really terrible thing that they did, that they need to face-to-face, ask for forgiveness and do all that, but all they can do at best is sorry. And if it doesn't work out, you know, it's like, well, I guess they're not my friend anymore. And we've got to teach our kids how to apologize. And a wonderful way, of course, to teach them how to apologize is to model it ourselves. And so like we talked about earlier, that if there's something that you've done with your screens that now, after thinking about it, you wish you would have done different, it's okay to apologize, to say, you know, I blew it with this and I'm really sorry. And as you model apology, that is not a weakness as a parent. Sometimes you think, well, I don't want to apologize. Don't want them to think mommy did it wrong, daddy did it wrong. No. When you've done something wrong, you apologize and you teach them how also to apologize. They can take responsibility at a very young age, and actually at a very old age too, your teenagers and your young adults also. Dr. Chapman talked about when his little boy, probably 5 years old, and he said, oh, look, the cookie broke. It just broke. And Dr. Chapman had to teach him to say, no, the cookie didn't just break. You broke it. And that's okay, but you need to say, I broke the cookie. Don't blame the cookie. It didn't break. You know, oh, look, the magic marker's all over the wall. No, the magic marker is not all over the wall. You put the magic marker all over the wall, and you need to learn. So from a very young age, and also expect it from your teenagers, that when they have done something wrong, that they learn, you insist on it, that they own up for it, that they vocalize it, that they ask for forgiveness, because technology will not teach them this. Technology will teach them, oh, just unfriend it, just block it, just drop it, and it's over. But that's not how real life works. The last A-plus skill is the skill of attention. And do you know, you guys are doing very well. You're paying very good attention. But do you know that in America since 2000, since mobile phones came into being, that our attention span has dropped 40% since the year 2000? And if you ask any teacher today, is it easier teaching today or was it easier 25 years ago? They'll say, oh my goodness, 25 years ago was so much different, because now you've got to have fireworks and changes and fun things and wow to keep kids' attention. And you know, if you have found with your kids that they're having behavior problems in school, they're having a hard time paying attention, they have a hard time paying attention to you, you can really ask yourself, what's their screen habits? What's their screen diet like? Because again, what do screens teach us? Instant pleasure. Like if it's not pleasurable and it's not amusing, your kids tune out. And how many of us know a lot of work and life and relationships is not pleasurable and amusing? It requires diligence. And so again, welcome boredom in your life, in your child's life, so that they can better learn how to pay attention. A wonderful way to strengthen attention in your child, whether you have a 3-year-old or whether you have an 18-year-old, is reading, for them to read. And any, you know, the experts agree on this, that the best predictor of school success is reading. And yet, you know how different it is reading online and reading in a book. For instance, if you take a book, you can sit here for a while and you can read. Oh, this grown-up social thing, I love it, and you can read. But when you're online and you're reading an article, same content even, article by page 2, by page 3, you're like, isn't this over yet, right? And you're looking at the side, and you're looking at all the ads. You're like, oh, I want to buy those shoes, and we should go on vacation there, and wow, look at that. The weather's going to be hot tomorrow. You know, we're all over the place because the internet teaches you to skim, and it teaches you to make quick decisions, and it's just very surfacey, whereas a book has more depth. And so if your child needs help with focusing and with attention, you need to get your child to read. And really, by fostering that love of reading, I always tease people because a lot of us, right, as adults, we struggle with finding time to read also. So I always tell the parents, I give you permission to stage it, that when you see your child is coming in the room, you hear him coming down the hall, you just read your Bible, anything. I'm reading. As they come in, I'm reading. Mommy and Daddy, we read because we learn when we read. And you just fake it till you make it, buddy. So you read. And when your kids see your nose in a good book, they will do the same. They will follow suit. So make going to the library a priority. Make finding books that your kids find interesting, that have good moral characters, that, you know, are going to be good books. Make that a priority. Make reading a priority. And that will really, really help your child's attention span. So we've talked about your child, about the emotional development, the 5 A's, and now we're going to talk about the brain. What is happening in the brain? You know, because my husband James always teases that when the kids are watching a DVD, look at them. You know, like they're in a trance. What's happening to their brain? And truly, when a baby is born, they have these billions and billions of neurons, and whatever is used, they keep. And whatever is not used gets pruned back. And that's why it's so important. Many times we think we have bought the lie of marketing, which has told us if your baby, if you're a teenager, if whoever is not online and doing all these things, they're going to miss it. Like if your baby's not doing baby Einstein and I can read by the time I'm 6 months old, you know, if they're not doing these DVDs, they're going to be behind. But the truth is that research shows over and over again that there is no program that can take the place of a human being interacting with another person. That your child can passively watch so many educational videos, but so many speech therapists have said so many kids are coming to us now because from age 0 to 2, they're watching screens. And their brains are not learning how to respond. They're not learning how to make the sounds. Because even though you think, well, they just repeated the S, they're not doing it all the time the same way they would with a human being. They're mostly listening. So it's very important during those early years of development with those brain cells that they're learning, oh, these are my motor skills and these are my speech skills, and their eyes are locked onto other people's eyes. Do you know they've found now that teenagers are not as good at reading emotion on a person's face because they're not used to reading faces. They're used to just reading text or looking at the little emojis, and they're not used to reading what is this subtle expression that this person is trying to show me. So you want your baby and you want your small children to be very, very, their brains to understand that. Dr. Gary Small at the UCLA Memory and Aging Center says this, the pathways for human interaction and communication weaken as customary one-on-one people skills atrophy. Do you know that people skills is actually a brain skill? It's something your child is learning. Sometimes we think, oh, our child was born that way. They were born shy or born not shy. No, no. These are learned behaviors that the brain is learning. Oh, when you meet an adult, it used to be that a child would know to look in the eye and shake the hand and nice to meet you, Mr. Smith. And then today, though, that's rare because we're losing those one-on-one people skills. Those parts of the brain of our children are atrophying because they're not using them. They may be great at video games. They may be great at things like that. It was so funny. This teacher told me the most crazy thing. She was about to retire after about 38 years of teaching. And I asked her, what's the most bizarre change you've seen? And she said, the kindergartners don't know how to play with each other at recess. That they stand there and they don't know how to interact with each other. They don't know how to like take turns going down the slide. They don't know what to do. And they just kind of stand there because they're so used to being in an environment with screens. And when the screens aren't there, they don't know what to do. Their brains haven't learned these really normal people skills. So make sure that your child learns this. Now, one of the things that I'm always asked is, okay, Arlene, I'm listening to this. I'm going to limit the screens a little bit less. And when they're, I'll wait till they're older. But Arlene, if I keep my child away from screens, they're going to be in their 20s and they won't be able to find a job because obviously everything is going to be automated and it's going to be so much more technological than it is today. And I don't want my child to be left behind. Well, they did this study at UCLA where they took a dozen people who use the internet all the time and they used a dozen novices who never went online. And they had them perform Google searches and they scanned their brains while they were doing it and they found their brains looked a lot different. So the expert users showed a lot of activation in the brain for quick decision making, their periphery vision, and then the others did not. When they read a print book, their brains looked the same. They had the non-users use technology. They did Google searches just 1 hour a day for 5 days in a row. And so it was only 5 hours, and they re-scanned their brains, and in just 5 hours, their brains looked exactly like the expert users. In just 5 hours of doing Google searches. And my encouragement to you is this: technology can be learned very easily and very quickly. You do not have to tell a 2-year-old what to do with an iPad. They know what to do with an iPad. After about 10 minutes, you're like, I didn't know it did that. You know, so they know that. It's very easy for them to learn. And just think of your kids. Think of technology now, how easy it is. By the time our 3-year-olds are in their 30s, they're going to be like, cheese pizza? And a drone will like drop a cheese pizza in their hand. I mean, things are just going to get easier and easier and easier. But in the 5 hours that it took to retrain their brains for technology, can I take a child for 5 hours and teach them those 5 A+ skills we talked about earlier? Can I teach them how to show affection? Can I teach them how to be appreciative? Can I show them how to manage anger, how to apologize, how to pay attention? Can I do that in 5 hours? Good luck. Yeah, that's a lifetime. That's the training. You know, Malcolm Gladwell in his book Outliers talks about what makes someone really great at something. 10,000 hours of practice. And isn't it lovely? It is lovely, parents. I know it doesn't seem lovely at sometimes that you get 10,000 hours with your child before they leave your home. But if 7 hours a day is spent on a screen, then by the time they graduate out of your home, they don't have the 10,000 hours needed to be a great human being, a good human being, a kind human being, a godly human being. They don't have that because they've been living for amusement and for entertainment because it's what's easy and what it's what's around us. So I want to encourage you to think about, wait a minute, technology can be learned very easily by my child's brain, but empathy, people skills, emotional skills, spiritual things, those things cannot be learned so easily. They did this study for college students, and they found that college students today are less empathetic than college students, 40% less empathetic than college students 20 years ago. I always think of 20 years ago, if I were to fall, someone would help me up, pick up my books. I mean, that might be my some enchanted evening moment to meet a college person, you know. But if I fell on a college campus today, people would not notice because they're just walking by like this. Nobody would even know. And then if they did see me fall, they'd take a picture, post it, be like, oh, that's so funny, and they'd walk away, you know, because technology teaches us it's all about us and it's not about this empathy for another human being. And so to think of that. And then before we leave the brain, I have to address two things. One is kind of funny for you middle school parents, and that is that they actually have another brain growth, just like those babies. There's this other huge spurt at puberty around 10, 11, 12, and where they get the second burst of brain cells. And here's this amazing quote by Dr. Jay Geed from the National Institute of Mental Health. And this is what he says. Our leading hypothesis is the use it or lose it principle. If a teen is doing music or sports or academics, those are the cells and connections that will be hardwired. If they're lying on the couch or playing video games or watching MTV, those are the cells and connections that are going to survive. And so when you see your tween and your teen and you think to yourself, wait a minute, whatever their brain is doing right now, a lot of, it's like their brain is making those nice grooves and it's these nice habits of what they do in their free time, what they think is normal, all those things. And if you realize, wait a minute, my child's going to be a 28-year-old who like plays video games all day and is going to come back home to live with me, then it is your time to intervene for your teens and your tweens to say, wait a minute, we need reading, we need work, we need to do something, because what their brain is used to in those tween and those teen years will be the things that they gravitate towards in adulthood, because the brain has already been wired to say, this is my normal, these are my habits. So I know it's not popular to say to your teenager, okay, you've already sent 3,000 texts this month. It's time for me to take your phone. But that may be some kind of intervention that will really help them in the future for their brain. Because, you know, the thing about screens, and we all know this because we've changed, haven't we? We check our phone more often. The average American worker checks their email 30 times an hour. So we're getting very used to being compulsive and checking for things because we like that. Remember how you used to go to the mailbox and you'd get something and you'd get a piece of personal mail and you'd be like, oh, look, someone wrote me. Well, that's what screen time is. It's like, oh, someone texted me. What was that ding? And it's this little rush of dopamine that the brain gets. And as an adult and as children, we're very susceptible to that. So one thing to watch for are, you know, addictive behaviors in your children. And you don't want to be like the parent of this senior in high school named Michael, who at his graduation party, where his family and friends were gathered, he lasted for 10 minutes before heading upstairs to his bedroom to play his video game, multiplayer video game. And his mom walked up in the room and said, Michael, it's your graduation party. Come on downstairs. We want to be with you. And he said, well, it's my party, and so it's for me, and I want to play games. And he stayed up in his room. And Michael is extreme, but I know for many of us, you can see, I see Michael in my child, the tendency to prefer video games over other things. And that's when you really want, you know, for your child to play video games is okay, but you have to know, does it control my child? Can my child go on vacation for a week without Wi-Fi and be okay? A lot of kids aren't, that they complain and they say, I want to go back. I can't be out here. And that's a great sign. They did a study over 10 countries with 1,000 students, and they took away their cell phone for 24 hours. And many of them said, I can't do it. And they said, I felt like I was on crack, like I just needed it so bad in my back pocket and I had to come back for it. And they asked why. And they said, it's my source of connection and comfort, that they feel lost without it. So technology is a tool, but if your teenager feels lost without it, then you wait a minute, this is a problem. Our tool is becoming too much like it has us instead of us mastering it. And so there is that real possibility of addiction. There are countries that are further along than we are, Taiwan, China, Korea, where they actually have centers that treat internet use disorder, because over 30% of their young people have this. And what it's defined as is 38 hours a week of gaming, a preoccupation with gaming, always thinking about when I can game next, a loss of other interests, things they used to like to do, they don't like to do anymore, loss of personal hygiene, they've tried to quit, but they're not able to, it disrupts their family life, it disrupts their obligations, etc. So we don't want to get our kids even close to this. And honestly, for you who have young ones in your home under 10, this is the time. Limit that technology. For those that have 10 and over and you're like, man, my child is in the thick of it, then you're going to want to rein back, and you might do simple things like a screen-free meal that you do once a week. And then once you get that once a week down, you do it twice a week, and you have the goal of having screen-free family meal times all week long. But if you can't get there right away, that's okay. You get there in steps. And so you have these places in your home that are screen-free, days that are screen-free, and that will help your child not to have that addictive behavior, because you really, really, really want to be on the watch for that. So we've talked about the brain, and we're going to land with screen time and us. Because isn't it true, we can look at our children, but they're looking back at us. And they're saying, Mommy, Daddy, you're on the phone a lot. You know, it was the joke at our house, because I was writing Growing Up Social, and my kids knew this. And of course, I'm not writing this in papyrus leaves. I'm writing this on my computer. And my daughter, Noelle, she'd be like, that's so funny, Mom. You're writing on Growing Up Social, and you look like those kids. You're like looking at your computer, you know. And it's true, isn't it? And for all of us, because of work and having our computer and having our email now so accessible, it's so easy to work all the time because there's always something to get done. There's always some kind of urgent thing. And so what I had to do with this, and I want to encourage you to do the same, is simply do the swivel. So if you're at your table and you're on your computer and your loved one, a spouse, a child comes in, you know, usually you yell the answer, right? It's in the kitchen. But you swivel and you say, it's in the kitchen. And you look at them, eyeball to eyeball, and then you go back to your work. But it's this whole idea that when you are with technology and a loved one, a human, comes in, you stop what you're doing. Your technology will not care. You have the discipline, you stop, and you look up. Oh, look, my husband came home from work. I will stop what I'm doing. I will look at him and say, welcome home, honey. Go a step further, give him a kiss, you know. And with your kids, if they know that they will see your eyes instead of you always looking down at your screen, if you're looking down here while you're talking to them, they think this is more important than me. And we don't want that for any of our kids. I know moms who have, you know, babies and they're so used to feeding all day and it just seems like this big monotonous thing all the time. So they've gotten smart, and they've multitasked. So as they're feeding their baby, they're scrolling through social media and then they've figured out, my goodness, I'm not even looking at my baby anymore as I'm feeding my baby. And so many little parenting habits that we have, if we were to look at ourselves, we say, when did I start doing that? And to really think of where are those swivel moments in your day where you need to put down your gadgets and you need to simply look at your children and you need to look at them in the eye so that they know that you are very important to them. Our kids are watching us. They're listening to what we say. So it is important to teach and to talk and explain, and it's also important to model. What we model digitally is more important than what we say about screen time. If we as parents are totally consumed all our waking hours with electronic media of any kind, we are communicating this is what life is about. This is the norm. Too often, parents give the right message, but in the wrong manner. We tell our children to limit screen time, but then we spend hours online after work. We say social media is unhealthy, but we've got Facebook running in the background. We say video games are a waste of time, then we spend 2 hours after work unwinding with a game. As one child said, my parents say I waste a lot of time with my iPad, but I see them doing the exact same thing. And so a lot of it is educating our children and educating ourselves and being aware of what we're doing. I love what the late Howard Hendricks said, that he said, you cannot impart what you do not possess. Am I saying it's wrong to pick up your computer at home? No. Am I saying it's wrong to check your email? No. But you've got to have a time where you stop. There's got to be a time where you say the restaurant is sacred, the dinner table is sacred, everything stops except what happens here. Friday night is game night, or Sunday is a screen-free day, we have some kind of digital Sabbath, that there's something, a habit in place that helps you put the stop on your technology, or else it will take over, and you will lose that contact with your children. I want to give you this word of hope, that as long as you have a child under your roof, it is not too late to make great changes with your screen time.
Arlene Pellicane and Growing Up Social. You've been listening to the Building Blocks for the Family broadcast from the Bible Broadcasting Network as we seek to help you build a strong family to the glory of God. For more information on getting a copy of today's broadcast, you can visit us at bbnradio.org. Go to the program schedule and then click on Building Blocks for the Family. bbnradio.org.
That concludes the online feature. By the way, BBN is on social media. Connect with us on Facebook and Twitter.